This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. A couple of weeks ago in Dearborn Heights, four children were killed and their mother was bound, slashed with a box cutter, and shot in the foot. She alone survived. The man charged with the crime is her husband. That same man murdered his previous wife in 1991. We wanted to talk about the best ways to hold domestic violence assailants accountable and keeping victims or potential victims safe. Joining us now is Barbara Neese May. She's the director of Safe House Center in Washtenaw County. This incident in Dearborn Heights, did this come out of nowhere or were authorities notified earlier about the problems? I mean, were there any complaints filed or the police called?
Yes. In this particular case, there were reports that happened. There were notifications that happened and weren't necessarily responded to in a way, obviously, that was going to save the children's lives or keep her from serious harm.
And that's what we want to talk about, how to keep them out of harm. What could have been done to prevent the murder of these children and the torture of their mother?
There's a lot of things that can happen, but often it involves rewinding. I think people want to focus on that day. I mean, they start with at 6 a.m., what happened that day?
This didn't come out of nowhere, and most of them don't, right?
No, absolutely not. Domestic violence is a situation that builds up over time, and the trajectory is different for every single situation. It knows no socioeconomic status, and it can happen to just about anybody. Assailants have what we call learned behavior. Some people think it's rooted in mental illness or drinking or drugging or something like that. But none of that is the case. It's absolutely learned behavior. So it can be unlearned. Depending on who you talk to, it's been years in the making. He clearly learned somewhere along the way that he can have this behavior and won't be held accountable for it.
How common is a situation? I mean, we had four children killed. Obviously, that's not common. But how common is that we have escalation, 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 and violence?
It is very common, Lester. Assailants use the violence as a means of control. For example, jealousy or I love you and so I want to spend more time with you than other people should be able to spend time with you. It kind of starts out with that. And then it starts to build up to I will do this, I will do that. And then they make good on those promises so that they can show I do control you. I am in charge. Violence escalates with the desire for control.
When there's not been an assault, what can police possibly do?
Oh, there's a lot of things that police can do. The legal definition of domestic violence involves the threat or commission of violence. And it is so frequent that there is some sort of threat of violence. A lot of survivors actually aren't even sure. For example, they may be standing and have literally their backs up against the wall. And you can imagine an assailant punching the wall right next to their face. Now, they're not punching the wall. They're punching the wall to tell her the next time it is going to be your face. That is considered a threat of violence. There's also threats of, I'm going to hurt your pet. I'm going to hurt the children. I'm going to take the children away. Those are threats that police need to know about because that's part of things that can go into the report to establish the history of violence.
The question here, she sought a personal protection order from a judge. Wasn't able to obtain one. How often does that happen when there are these threats of violence? I'm wondering whether police and courts take domestic violence complaints seriously all over the state or all over the nation, or is it just here and there?
It's actually subjective, quite unfortunately. We do have public policy that dictates how things should happen. However, people who are the arbiters of the criminal system, which could be law enforcement, it can be the prosecutors, it can be defense attorneys, it can be judges, it can be the jail commanders. I mean, just who makes the decisions when and how what they base it on. Unfortunately, for a lot of them, domestic violence is not seen as serious as other crimes because there's a perception of only one victim versus many.
Explain that to me because I'm not following. Why would it just be one victim? I mean, that seems like enough for anybody to be concerned about domestic violence if it's just one, let alone many.
Exactly. And that's the concern that I have, too. Say, for example, there's a jail overcrowding issue. Typically, DV assailants have very good behavior. So there is this automatic, well,
DV, domestic violence.
Yeah, domestic
right.
violence. Thank you. There's this automatic reaction of, well, then they should be released first because of the good behavior. And the reality is that they should be the last ones to be released because we know exactly what they're going to do as soon as they're released. They're going to go straight to that survivor and they're going to try and terrorize them.
So he's a nice guy while he's inside, and as soon as he gets out, there's only one person he's really interested in harming, so that's why he's a nice guy to everybody else. Is that what you're saying?
Because it gets him closer to his goal of being able to control the survivor again.
Are there places for families to go when they feel threatened, before the violence actually takes place? But we hear, as you said, it is violence when they're pounding the wall next to your face. Clearly, that's a threat. Is there a place people can go?
Yes, absolutely. There is a place for everybody to go to where they can seek safe shelter in crisis. And we also have reciprocity throughout the state, because it's possible somebody in Ishpeming doesn't feel comfortable going to their local program. And so they need to come downstate to truly escape and get away.
Now, I want to ask you what has to happen, what needs to happen for a community to protect the rights of everyone involved in a domestic dispute. But I also want to get back to that question of why we're seeing different ways of approaching this. Are we still that much of a misogynist society that we say, you know, hey, you know, she had it coming, or something like that we might hear from the 1950s and would think would be gone by now, but apparently maybe it's not. I don't know.
I've been doing this work for 20 years. This is the good news. 20 years ago, I could be in a crowded room of people from all walks of life and ask the question, do you think that domestic violence is wrong? And maybe half the hands would go up. And now I can be in a crowded room and I can ask the question, do you think domestic violence is wrong? And most of the hands will go up. That's the shift that I have seen. The thing that has not shifted, though, is what are we willing to do as communities to address the problem so that we can keep survivors safe and hold assailants accountable? That is where the interpretation starts to splinter. For example, if someone is in a quiet cul-de-sac in Saline, they hear a neighbor being assaulted. There are some people that would say, what is happening is wrong, but I have no business in calling the police. Another case in point, there could be a survivor, you know, who is working at, you know, say a hardware store, and the assailant keeps coming in and bothering her. It is possible now, though, you know, the flip of this, that the boss says, you know, you're not welcome here. You can't do this. It just really depends on who that person is. And there are different perspectives on why. I strongly encourage reporting. I strongly encourage, if you hear that happening next door, call the police. I strongly encourage letting that survivor know they are not alone, that you know what's happening and that they don't deserve it.
So when you say community, you don't mean just the police, the prosecutors, and the judicial system. You mean everybody needs to get involved.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought it up about police, prosecutors, judges. The new police officers, when they're going out with a seasoned police officer, they're watching what that seasoned police officer is doing and how they're responding to it. If they're responding, which most of our police officers don't, oh, there they go again. She's not going to do anything. Then they're going to adopt that attitude also. Eventually, they may say, well, that's really kind of wrong. But eventually, there's a culture that's established. And fortunately, the law enforcement leadership in our community, by policy, has said domestic violence is wrong. We will hold assailants accountable. And we will call Safe House when we get a 911 call to let them know there's a survivor in the community who needs their help.
So that's key. You've got to have people who keep watch and stand up for people. Let the victims of domestic violence know that they're being cared for by others. The police have to be aware and not become callous, because they see it a lot. And then it's a matter of having a safe place to go, like you've been talking about.
And then the system holding the assailant accountable so that she can continue to be safe. If he goes to jail and is just released overnight and then nothing else happens, he's like, yeah, I spent a night in jail. I can continue to do this. Whereas if they're held accountable with the judge saying what you did is wrong, with their attorney, who they deserve to have, their defense attorney, saying you did break the law and this is what's going to happen. And then when they go to jail, they are held in the jail and not released because they're Mr. Nice Guy to everybody else.
Barbara Niesmay is the executive director of Safe House Center. We've been talking about domestic violence and what can be done to prevent it in our community and your community. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.